Welcome to The Underground, my little underground with Peter A.
It's My Little Underground. I'm Peter A. And this week on the show, we're going back to 2014, and I'm going to share with you some of the albums that I listened to a ton and how well these albums have aged. And this was a period that I was listening to a lot of different types of music and trying to go out of my comfort zone. And there is a consistent style of music on my list for 2014 because I was listening to a lot of like shoegaze and noise pop, dream pop, and all that stuff. It really resonated with me. And this is the kind of music that I think I've always needed. It's very relaxing, tranquil, and it has a lot of fury to it, and most consistently, melody. You know, melody is what captures me when it comes to music. Even in hip-hop, like vocally, there's not a ton of melody, but sonically, there's a ton of rich melody. Like, J Dilla's beats have a ton of melody. Even Premier, Madlib, there's a lot of rich melody in it, which I love. Like, all types of music, you know, melody is the one constant that I focus on, that really resonates with me. And speaking of which, we're going to start with Taco Cat's second album, NVM, which is shorthand for Nevermind. And this album is filled with fun, feminist, pop-leaning, surf punk, most specifically Crimson Wave. This is just an anthem for people who menstruate. And if you've seen the MSNBC documentary Periodical, this song was used in the closing credits. And if you haven't seen this documentary, I highly recommend. I learned so much. And as I'm watching it, I'm thinking about Taco Cat. I'm thinking about Crimson Wave because it's the perfect song for this. And I love it. It was so poetic that they used this song in the closing credits. Perfect. And all through this album, just expect bright, simple, catchy, pure melodic joy. Songs like Party Trap, Snow Day, Time Pirate, and Stereogram. Because when you think of Seattle, it's a very gray city, but these songs are so sunny and clear. It's like Taco Cat's creative mind. It's 75 degrees and sunny all the time. And when you think about the early Seattle grunge movement, it's very sad, brooding, like low tune, heavy guitars, and just a kind of angst and apathy. But Taco Cat is like the opposite. You know, they're speaking about societal issues that, you know, that we should pay attention to in a very fun way, but it's almost like the opposite of what the grunge movement was, because it's very just, we're living in sadness. But Taco Cat, there's some sadness to it, but it's very enlightening and it's fun. They're having a good time when the apocalypse is happening, so to speak. That's what the aesthetic that Taco Cat creates. And I'd say 10 years later, this album ages very well. I still listen to it. And, you know, we're in mid-February now, and spring is right around the corner. And spring and summer and early fall is when I just want to put Taco Cat on endlessly, because it's music that's filled with vitamin D. So highly recommend Taco Cat's second album, NVM, if you haven't heard it. It's amazing, even 10 years later. Moving on to Foo Fighters' Sonic Highways, and this is the eighth album in their collection. And this band also has roots in Seattle. You know, Dave played for Nirvana for a while, so yeah, he has a deep connection to Seattle. And this album was different than the rest of their catalog because they recorded each song in a different city. So there was Chicago, DC, Nashville, Austin, LA, New Orleans, Seattle, and New York City. And there was a HBO series that documented the recording. But also, what's interesting, about the Sonic Highways TV show is that we're not essentially learning about Foo Fighters and Dave Grohl's music history. We're learning about that too, but it's a small part of it, in my opinion. But you're also learning about the music history of each city, right? Take DC, for example. We're learning about Bad Brains. We're learning about Minor Threat. We're learning about go-go music. This is how I learned about this kind of music, with bands like Trouble Funk. Then in Nashville, we're getting a really good, authentic history of country music. We're hearing about Dolly Parton, Emmylou Lou Harris, Bonnie Raitt, and the Grand Ole Opry. Then in New Orleans, we're learning about the Preservation Jazz Hall, and of course the people that were affected by Hurricane Katrina. And then New York City, we're learning about hip-hop. We're hearing from LL Cool J, and I believe Chuck D was in it as well, along with Woody Guthrie. And then there's Gentrification. They were learning about Electric Lady Studios and the Magic Shop Studio and all that stuff. So the show, as well as the album, I highly recommend. But let's talk about the actual music here. So some of the standout songs on Foo Fighters Sonic Highways, we have Feast and the Famine, which is the DC song. And it has a lot of DC hardcore roots, because Dave was also part of Scream. And there's a ton of punk energy on this song, because Scream actually plays on this song. You know, because we have Fran Stahl and Skeeter Thompson. And yeah, this song is just fury and energy. And it's just, it's very DC hardcore, but it also is like a song like Foo Fighters would make. Like, they have a lot of like ferocious songs, which is it's very on brand. And this is one of the standouts of this album, I think. It's great. And the episode, the DC episode, is amazing too. Now, the Nashville song, Congregation, it has a lot of, you know, it has a bit of a twang to it. You know, it's not something Foo Fighters normally do, but it's not like a full-on country song. And Zach Brown is on this too, but I would say, even though this is not really a country song at all, but it's a better country song than most of the pop country stuff that I'm hearing today, honestly. It's a gorgeous song, and it's Foo Fighters at its core, but it has a hint of Nashville twang, and it's great. Then we got the New Orleans track, In the Clear. Has a ton of second line energy with the help of the Preservation Jazz Hall Band. And I remember hearing criticisms about this album that, well, each of the songs don't sound like the cities that they recorded in. Yeah, that is true, with some exceptions, but it would be an inauthentic experience to have Dave do a song in the style of the city. It just come off phony. You know, they did a Foo Fighters album, but they just recorded in a different, they're inspired by the city, you know, lyrically, a little bit sonically, but it's not going to be, Dave's not going to do a hip hop. He's not going to do a hip hop song. He's not really going to do a folk song. He's not going to do a country song. You know, it doesn't really make sense. I don't really understand that criticism, but I think this is one of their best albums in their catalog. I spent a ton of time with this album. I'm a huge fan of the Foos, but this album is one of my favorites in the catalog. I love a tight, concise album. And each of these songs, lyrically, they're very compelling and interesting and very well put together. Even like last year, I was re-listening to this album because I know we were getting close to the 10th anniversary, and I was re-watching Sonic Highways, and then, you know, Taylor Hawkins just died, and then I was listening to their new album, and Congregation was like, whoa, I'm hearing the song differently. You know, it's aging very well, I think. My favorite Foos is, you know, There's Nothing Left to Lose. That's probably my favorite album, because three-piece and this, their melodic edge on that album was just it was focused on melody, which I love. All right, moving on to Death From Above, 1979, The Physical World. Now, this is their comeback album, because they were broken up for a decade. And in the 10-year gap since You're a Woman, I'm a Machine, I know Jesse Keeler, the bassist, he went on to do Mastercraft, and Sebastian had, you know, a solo album. But then they did a show at, what was it, Coachella? I think it was Coachella in 2011. That was the reunion show. Then that went well. And then they started recording again. Started rehearsing and recording again. They had a great documentary around this time period called Life After Death From Above, 1979. And it's great. It tells the whole story of, you know, their rise and their breakup at the peak. I think they were going on tour with Queens of the Stone Age and Nine Inch Nails. They played in Madison Square Garden. They did some shows with Foo Fighters. They were just on their way. But then at their peak, they just stopped. And now we're in 2024, and the 20th anniversary of You're a Woman, I'm a Machine is looming. And the band has been teasing something. Maybe a possible re-release, because they just put out Turn It Out XX as a single. And if you don't know, Turn It Out was the track one on You're a Woman, I'm a Machine. So very excited to see what they're going to do there. So back to the physical world. This was a really solid comeback album, because they haven't done anything in a decade up until this point. And I really love the intro, Cheap Talk. The riff has been in my head for years, and I totally forgot that it was this song. I'm thinking, what Death From Above song has this riff? And I listened to this album front to back recently. I'm like, that's it. I didn't think it was going to be Cheap Talk, but it turns out it was Cheap Talk. But anyway, this album has a phenomenal lead single, Trainwreck 1979, and it is great live. When they put this album out during this cycle, I saw them a couple of times, and this song live really works. It's perfect. And some of the album cuts on here, like Crystal Ball, it is a great danceable jam. It's like classic DFA, but you know, their production quality is more as a higher fidelity, because their early work is very fuzzy garage punk. But this is very radio friendly in the best way. They actually got some radio play for this album too. And I think the album closer on this album, the title track, The Physical World, probably the best album closer in their career. It's amazing. Even their classic album, You're a Woman, I'm a Machine, the closing song was Sexy Results. And I have a fondness for this song, because it's a Simpsons reference. But Sexy Results is not as good as The Physical World, I don't think. But overall, I think this album ages pretty well. I think it's one of their better albums in their catalog. And it was the next step. This would have been their second album had they not broken up in, 2006. And, like I said, their earlier work is very fuzzy, and it's very a little lo-fi, which is cool when you're starting out. But the thing about this band is, they always want to improve. They don't want to do the same old, same old. But I can say that, The Physical World is not exactly like You're a Woman, I'm a Machine. But it's similar. But they were working on themselves, right? Even in their documentary, which I highly recommend, Jesse was saying, he stopped drinking and he became a better bass player. And Sebastian was taking singing lessons. And he even said something in the documentary that was very interesting about the recording of their first album, that it wasn't, he was singing unnaturally, which is interesting. So I like to see a band that wants to take steps to improve themselves and not do the same old, same old. So I have a lot of respect for this band. And they have such a creative and unique sound anyway. So even if they did the same thing from the first album, it wouldn't matter, because there's not a lot of bands that sound like them. Lightning Bolt. But Lightning Bolt's a little bit more weird and experimental. This group is a lot more let's party and have a good time kind of thing. But as a comeback album, and thinking about this album 10 years after it came out, it's still great. I think it ages pretty damn well, too. Okay, this next album is definitely one of my favorites in this list that I put together. It's St. Vincent's eponymous album. It's her fourth solo album. And in 2015, she won a Grammy for this for Best Alternative Music Album, whatever that means. And this was actually my introduction to her. And what a way to start. Some people said, well, actor is her best, and you know, I forgot the name of her first two albums, but the Actor is great. I love Actor, but this is my favorite. It has a lot of strange but very accessible arrangements, like Rattlesnake. Those staccato O's and the explosive guitar solo. And at the time, I saw a write-up of this album, and they likened the guitar solo to an anxiety attack, which is it's an interesting picture to paint for this song. And I'm gonna read to you if I may, some of the quirky lyrics on here, like, follow the power lines back from the road, no one's around, so I take off my clothes. I mean, that's great. You know, it's very it's fun, and I remember hearing that for the first time and just dying laughing. Because, you know, I was driving a lot during this time period, and just, you know, hearing that just kept me calm in rush hour traffic. And then there's Birth in Reverse, the opening line, oh, what an ordinary day, take out the garbage, masturbate. Amazing. Just amazing. So fun and very tongue-in-cheek. I love that. And then there's the song's lead single, which is how I came across St. Vincent, Digital Witness. This song is just infectious. It's bombastic, has a very massive horn section, and one of the refrains in the verses, people turn the TV on, it looks just like a window. I love that, because she's talking about this digital world that we live in. Everyone's on their phones and just, you know, just kind of just sucked in to the goings on of social media. Everyone's talking point and being in echo chambers and all this stuff. But one of like the lyrical pieces and sections of this song that really resonate with me even a decade later is the final chorus, right? I'll read it to you. Digital witness. What's the point of even sleeping? If I can't show it, if you can't see me. I love that. It's great. And she goes on to say, what's the point of doing anything? What's the point of even sleeping? And I just imagine that, you know, this day and age, you know, some people have trouble sleeping because they're just looking at their phone, scrolling. Maybe that's what she's referring to. And she goes on to say, so I stopped sleeping. Yeah, I stopped sleeping. And here's the best line. Won't somebody sell me back to me? I think that can mean so many different things. It can mean, you know, stuff that you're searching through, and you can get advertisements targeted to you, and, you know, just having the internet and what other people are posting shape your own image. It's just, I love this. It's great. You know, even 10 years later, I'm still thinking about this and listening to it. And I think this is the best album in St. Vincent's collection. And it's one of my favorites from her. And yes, I can say this album ages very, very well. Hopefully it'll age very well a decade later. But it's great stuff. If you're trying to get into St. Vincent, I would start here. Moving on to Run the Jewels. Run the Jewels 2, their second album. They followed up their eponymous debut in 2013. From 2013. A big shout out to Killer Mike, because he recently won 3 rap awards at the Grammys. Best Rap Album, Rap Performance, Rap Song for his solo album, Michael. And this was not televised. I think that is horrible, because hip-hop is one of the most popular forms of music in the world. It is appropriated, it is watered down, and the culture of it has been just used and abused. And we just came off of celebrating 50 years of hip-hop. There was a lot of hoopla about it. There was so many shows, all this stuff going on, and then music's so-called biggest night doesn't even televise their rap awards. I mean, I stopped caring about the Grammys and award shows a long time ago, but hopefully this wakes people up. I'm just saying, like, this is, it's kind of ridiculous. But going back to 2014 with Run the Jewels. Now, in 2014, when they dropped this album, this was when their popularity started to rise, because they ended up opening for Jack White at Madison Square Garden, and they ended up doing a cameo at Portlandia. They were on the they were on the fast track to becoming stars, and they weren't really getting like major radio play at all. You know, maybe I've heard on college stations, and I've heard like some of the instrumentals for Run the Jewels used in commercials and promos for radio stations, but they never really had any real kind of major radio play. But they were getting all these huge festival shows, and think about their whole promotional, you know, tactics were very just for the people. They put their albums out for free. That's amazing. It's just amazing. And then they just ended up, you know, becoming bigger than they ever expected to be. And I love that for them. I think Run the Jewels 2 definitely wins an award for best song titles, because one of the best songs on here is Close Your Eyes and Count to Fuck, featuring Zach De La Roca of Rage Against the Machine. It's an amazing song title. When they announced this album and the track list came out, I saw this song. I'm like, that's going to be great. Close Your Eyes and Count to Fuck. Amazing. And a lot of this song is just about society collapsing, and Killer Mike definitely paints a very vivid picture of a prison riot. And one of my favorite lines on this song is from LP, and he says, "I'm a New Yorkian, I'm fucked from the jump, I wear my Yankees so tilted, I actually walk with a hunch." That's just has a lot of big city confidence, and LP's native of Brooklyn. There's a lot of that energy there. It's amazing. Like these guys, they just came in, they came out swinging together. They're just a perfect combination. And if you listen to a lot of LP's work, or Company Flow, which has a lot of that same energy, and you know, I remember Killer Mike from the Bone Crusher song Never Scared from 2003, and they got a lot of the same energy, you know. So I'm glad that these two found each other creatively. Moving on to the Ravenettes, their seventh album, Pay Ahi. And this album was essentially a surprise because it had very little promo. Because I remember I discovered them while listening to a Dum Dum Girls Pandora station, and Ali Walk With Me from Lust, Lust, Lust came on, and I just became hooked. They had this noisy surf rock pop energy with a hint of shoegaze and a bit of electronic influences, and I just became hooked because I just got into, you know, My Bloody Valentine, and then the Jesus and Mary chain I was listening to a lot of. So this, they're a progression of that, and Pei has a lot of that energy, but they have a little bit more like electronic influences, and you really feel the surf energy there. Like there's a lot of sonics, that the soundscapes that really put you at the beach. And thematically, this album has a good concept to it. It's a lot of death, a lot of betrayal and infidelity. And songs like Z-Boys have this, you know, this gorgeous swell of feedback and noisy surf guitars. And it sounds like a My Bloody Valentine intro, but made into an entire song. Because like a song like To Hear Knows When from My Bloody Valentine, and they have this really cool coda at the end of it. They have two different versions, one on the Tremolo EP and one on Loveless, and it's kind of like that, but made into an entire song. It's like the Ravenettes took that idea and just kind of fleshed it out into a second passage in this song. And Z-Boys, this song I listened to, this is what you can listen to driving at night. It's a great, or walking around at nighttime. It is a great nighttime song, and a decade later, I'm still just loving it. And Kill off of Pei Ahi has a lot of colorful and blunt themes of infidelity. You know, as Sharon Fu sings, "Never met my dad in a loving dream, smiling in a moonless night, One time I saw my dad fuck a redhead whore. I never ever thought I would. That is a lot of pain there. And this song is very spooky too. It sounds a little bit like Ally Walk With Me from Lust, Lust, Lust. It sounds just like that. It has a lot of just like evil and just dark. And it's amazing. It almost sounds like a little bit like a Nine Inch Nails song. It's a little trip hop feel. Maybe like a garbage B-side. It has a little bit of that in there, but it's still kind of the Ravenettes. It's perfect. This album, a decade later, I'm still obsessed with. I still think about it all the time. And it's an album, because of the dark heaviness to it, it's an album to enjoy in winter. And when you're listening to it in winter, it kind of reminds you of summer. And then when you listen to it in the summer, it reminds you of summer and also winter. But yeah, this is a very special album to me. And it's one of my favorite albums. And it's probably it's my favorite album in the Ravenettes catalog. And one of my favorite albums, period. It's just, it really resonates with me. And it's the album for me. You know, it has a lot of melody, has a lot of Brightsurf influences with a lot of shoegaze inspiration. And that's it. That's how you hook me. But, you know, your songs have to be good. There's a lot of shoegaze stuff that's just kind of bland and boring, but these guys are exciting. And you can't pigeonhole them, too. They have shoegaze influence, but I can't just say, okay, this is all you guys are. This is all the Ravenettes are. It's just shoegaze. No. They have tons of influences, which what makes them special. Moving on to another shoegaze-inspired group, and it's a lesser-known band called The History of Apple Pie. And in 2014, they put out their second but final album, Feel Something. And they broke up quietly in 2015, which makes me sad because this album is when they were really starting to get their groove. And they have a lot of memorable and beautiful fleshed out pop melodies, very My Bloody Valentine-esque, and early Always. And what's interesting is that Always was starting to bubble up during this time. They put out their debut album here too, but I feel like, you know, Always continued after The History of Apple Pie, and Always got much better. Just imagine what The History of Apple Pie would have become if they had stayed together. I think they had a ton of potential. And what makes The History of Apple Pie special is everything I love about music. I love melody, but this band in particular, right, they don't have songs that you can sing along to, really. But the songs will stay in your head. The tune will be in your head. And which is what I love about them. They have a lot of peaceful and groovy and just really sugary sweet melodies. Like Jamais Vu has this massive, massive chorus that I kind of like rotate in and out of my workout playlist 10 years later. And then there's Don't You Want to Be Mine, which is one of the early singles of this album. Has a lot of fuzzy, noisy grooves that it's kind of a banger. And I think it'll work at a party or on a road trip. Yeah, like History of Apple Pie is definitely like drive around music when you're on your way to the beach or something. And I remember, you know, first discovering them around this period of time and on like a CMJ mixtape when they used to do those monthly mixtape sharing songs for free of up-and-coming artists. And it's really a shame that this group kind of broke up before they really were starting to hit their stride. And yeah, I still listen to them a decade later. I remember going to a record store on Long Island. I went to Looney Tunes. And, you know, I don't know what bands people know or don't know. I'm thinking a record store probably have some sort of, a record store worker has more obscure taste than the average Joe. So maybe they would know this band. I asked them, do you guys have any History of Apple Pie albums? They were like, what? What? They looked at me like I was insane. Anyway, I at least hope it's the 10th anniversary, so maybe even though they're broken up, maybe they'll reissue this album on vinyl or something. But moving on to the last album on my list, it's Beverly in their first album, Careers. And Beverly is a project of Drew Citron and Frankie Rose. And there's a lot of surf rock and shoegaze, a little bit of shoegaze, noise pop and dream pop influences. Just imagine La Luce and Hope Sandoval, a little bit of Lush and early Dum Dum Girls combined into one. And this entire album is filled with tremendous, tremendous harmonies and dreaming soundscapes and fuzzy guitars. That's kind of my cup of tea. And songs like Medora and Out on a Ride, Planet Birthday, and it's just fun, summery, vitamin D-laced tunes. And I remember when this came out, I was listening to this all summer long and even into winter. I remember seeing Beverly at Babies All Right in Brooklyn in February. You know, I was still jamming to their stuff when snow was on the ground. And if any of you have cars now and you're in the mood for some road trip music, once again, just like History of Apple Pie, definitely recommend Beverly. Sweet, lush melodies, lots of beautiful, beautiful harmonies, and just all around fun music. You know, I'm into this kind of stuff where it's, well, around this time I was getting into a lot of like, you know, early, like, noisy C86 style, like indie pop, like the Vaseline's. This is cut from that cloth, in my opinion. But yes, I would say 10 years later, Careers definitely ages very, very well. And Drew Citron went to, over the years, started doing a lot more solo work. Do I hope for Beverly to put out a new album? If they want to, sure. I really just hope that Canine Records, the label that put this out, just reissues it for the 10th anniversary. That's all I ask. All right, that's enough 2014 talk. And I will put together a sister playlist and to share some of these songs from 2014 that I really enjoyed. And I'll link the playlist in the description for you to enjoy. All right, I'm Peter A. This is My Little Underground. Later days.
My Little Underground.